You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the latest edition of the Royal Blue Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Carroll, and we've got a bumper crew today, a back four of myself, Conor O'Neill, Gavin Buckland, and, of course, Dave Prentice, everyone's favourite Everton author over Christmas. Dave, a lot of nice reviews for a grand old team to report.
I've had a lot of very favourable reviews, all on social media, none from my friends at the Echo. But yeah, that was very, very pleasantly, I'm not surprised. I was kind of hoping that people would receive it very well. And it seems to have gone down well. Yeah, lots of nice messages, which I'd like to thank everybody for. It's great reading them all. Great reading nice stuff about your work on social media rather than criticism for a change. So I'm glad people enjoyed it.
Well, from nice messages then to a not so nice game at Goodison Park last time out. Went into it, didn't we? Confident. There was a lot of confident predictions on the Royal Blue Podcast, the previous edition. If you did tune in, I don't think any of us took the 3 points home for a 1-0 West Ham win. Mm. I've just spoken to Michael Ball for his column. Proud to stick with you, and he quite simply put it as a night to forget. It's pretty fair assessment, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a dreadful match. Just so dull and non-existent, really, of any kind of like attack and creativity. David Moyes did a number on us. He's very aware of the fact that, you know, his side had been put through the mill over the Christmas period in terms of injuries and COVID tests and games coming thick and fast. And he just came to Goodison and did what we know he's quite capable of doing, setting the team up that was not going to lose or not going to concede chances, and then just take what it could going forward in the final third. And unfortunately, we didn't have the zest or the creativity to break that down. Richarlison is going through a poor run of form at the moment. We have to say that. And, you know, we rely on him so heavily for so much of our goal output and our creativity. When he's not doing it, there's not really much elsewhere. I mean, obviously, Iwobi wasn't around. James Rodriguez was only on the... Actually, you know, James looked bright, you know, sort of on the occasions that, you know, sort of he got on the ball, but obviously it wasn't enough. So we just were incapable of breaking them down. And you could just sort of sense that West Ham had little moments in the second half where, you know, they fancied the chances. They didn't certainly pose under any kind of pressure. And sod's law, the game, the goal that was going to decide the game came from a slashed shot across the goal that was going well wide that Yerry Mina managed to deflect into the path of somebody else. And it was just, it was a horrible night all round. I mean, when you sat listening to Steve McManaman and Buddy Fletch, you know, sort of excruciate your ear balls anyway, and then try and claim, you know, sort of how great a goal that was. It was like, it was just a night to forget, really. And we're going to get moments like that during this season because it's still very, very much a work in progress, as we've said with Carlo. We've had three great results back to back, and we've had, you know, so a bad one. So it's three steps forward, one step back. Let's not beat ourselves up about it. It was a grim night. It was flat. It was uneventful. But looking at the bigger picture, let's not get too down on ourselves.
A nice bit of perspective there, Gavin. I think that is what we all need, isn't it? If someone would have offered you, I think, are we still in fourth in the Premier League table at the start of January, at the start of the season, you would have bit the hand off, surely.
Yeah, absolutely. Got to see the big picture. As you say, the only sort of concern I've got is the car we've been quite sticky, haven't we?
Yeah,
we started off really well, and then we tanked a little bit just before lockdown and went great over. Then started the season with 7 wins, then had 1 win in 8 games or whatever it was, and 1-4 on the spinners player was loon. So hope this is not one of those. Again, we're going to start another sequence now where we tail off a bit. So it's once and again, only as long as we come back in the next two or three fixtures and show the form he's shown in December. I agree with Ben. Not many benefits of lockdown, but certainly one of them on New Year's Day. I was thinking I'd be sitting there absolutely freezing. freezing something off, shall we say. And, probably an ace in the hangover, or hangovers we all do on New Year's Day, watching that rubbish, you know. So I was actually sitting on my couch, chocolate and biscuits, thinking, thank God I'm not there, you know. So that was the only benefit of lockdown I think about. It's noticeable that Phil and Adam not here, so I believe they're still frozen to their seats, are they?
It's like a cartoon. We're going to go and like chisel them out of the ice blocks when we get a chance.
No one's a terrible game, but Monster just put behind us, but we need to come back and do a lot better next time. I was obviously, we've got a cup game, obviously, we'll talk about it on the week, which may give us an opportunity to get another victory.
It was an odd one, though, wasn't it, Connor? I mean, before the game, you know, Lukas Fabianski, one of the most consistent goalkeepers in the Premier League, he gets injured. Randolph comes in. He didn't look totally comfortable with his kicking, as if maybe he was carrying a bit of an injury as well. And by no means, I don't think a West Ham, they haven't been known over the last couple of seasons for their kind of defensive solidity. But we didn't really seem to be taking the game to them. I think at times it almost seemed like Everton with the away team, didn't it?
Yeah, I think the tactical setup was not probably too dissimilar to what we'd seen in recent weeks, the way Everton have set up. But I think the difference was that in the last couple of weeks where we played teams who were probably more attacker-minded than we are, played a team there who we had to be more attacker-minded of than them. And I think what Pennell said earlier about, you know, David Moyes doing a number on us, that's exactly what happened. It was a stalemate. It was almost like a game of chess going nowhere until a deflected effort falls into the lap of West Ham playing in the final 10 minutes. But I think that was the most disappointing thing, was that we didn't really, even after the first 10, 15 minutes, we didn't up the ante and really take the game to West Ham. We just kind of carried on plodding along and hoping that something would come off without really trying. And I think that was the most disappointing thing, because you kind of felt that Everton could have been up 3 or 4 gears quite easily. And they didn't. They didn't even really get going. I mean, even after West Ham scored, we didn't really look like carving them open or creating any chances. And I think what Pennell said there as well about, you know, being a work in progress, that was the most clear sign to me, you know, probably all season that we've had that this is still a major work in progress. And, you know, Carlo Ancelotti's squad certainly needs improving and certainly needs more fine tuning if we are going to be consistent and top four challengers.
I know you mentioned them a little bit there. I mean, what's going on with Richarlison at the moment? He just looked a little bit. He just looks angry, doesn't he? He certainly isn't enjoying his football, I don't think.
No, I wish I knew the answer, because he's so important to us, and you know you're always going to get a shift from him. You know, his attitude is always absolutely top class, which is why Carlo very rarely, you know, sort of withdraws him. You know, so he's normally on the pitch until the final whistle. Because, you know, that there's always a prospect of him pulling something out of nowhere. But whatever he's trying at the moment just isn't quite coming off. And I don't know what that is. Is it a confidence thing? Has he just played a bit too much football? I don't know. I wish I knew the answer. But there's no doubt whatsoever that he is actually toiling at the moment. He's struggling for form. Would he benefit from being pulled out of the firing line for a game or two? I'm not so sure he would. You get the impression he's one of these players that hates not being involved. He's got to be on the pitch all the time. And he's the kind of player that probably needs to play through it, I think. You know, maybe just get one. Maybe play him against Rotherham at the weekend, you know, and so try and get his confidence up and, you know, get a goal. I don't know. If we get a penalty again, allow him to take it rather than Gylfi Sigurdsson. It's difficult to know exactly what to do to try and turn him round. Obviously, what Carlo's seen on the training pitch is working, because he's still picking him, you know, so whenever he's fit. But he's definitely not right at the moment. We're not seeing quite the player that we were, you know, so maybe 6 weeks ago, start of the season. And it's a concern, no doubt whatsoever about that.
It's a concern, Gav, but, you know, we all know and love Richarlison. I think maybe he's had a couple of spells like this, not only at Everton, I think, but in English football as well. I don't think he scored in the second half of the season for Watford, did he, when he first came to England? obviously, I don't think it's anything that's going to last quite that long. But, you know, Carlo Ancelotti will be hoping that he finds form sooner rather than later, because it feels like when Richarlison isn't firing, Everton don't fire, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Not only is his offensive output, but his defensive covering as well. Sam, a couple of observations about New Year's Day. Let's say, is it in the grey? Started on the right, didn't he?
Yeah.
On Sheffield United. But his best position starting on the left. I think you always put best players in the best positions. That's where they are. And I would have swapped them at one stage, didn't he? I would just have some wide left and play Bernard on the other side. Especially against somebody like West Ham, where you're going to, you know what Moyes is set up. You know, it's going to be tight. As I put him wide left. I also think I know a couple of people mentioned he'd always had that concussion, hadn't he, against Manchester United.
Yeah.
Had to take six days, I think, under the Premier League rules. I'm just wondering whether he was fully functioning in terms of, it's just general fitness and just general being at it, you know. I think we need to take that into account on Friday. But I would like to see him playing and try and play himself back into form, because the essential part of our team, isn't he? He's one of the two or three key players that we've got that you can't really do without. So I'm not particularly concerned about Richarlison at the moment. I think there's a couple of mitigating factors for Friday. If it was Friday, I think it was, wasn't it? Yeah.
You do lose track of your days over the period.
Yeah, I think it was. I can't remember. I think it was Friday, wasn't it? Yeah. Just as an added thing about Moyes, it couldn't have been a more Moyes-like performance if Tim Cahill had come on and scored the only goal from a header 10 minutes in time, wouldn't it, really, you know? but Richarlison, I think I'm okay with Richarlison. I wouldn't need too much into Friday. I think he needs a few games back under his belt after that concussion, to be fair.
He's a young lad and he's an enthusiastic lad, isn't he, Connor? Do you think there is just that aspect, and perhaps we kind of got an insight into it when the kind of bizarre penalty incident happened with Sigurdsson against Chelsea, where one minute he was kind of half fronting Sigurdsson for the ball and the next minute he's smiling and celebrating with him. Is there just that element of he's maybe just trying too hard? And, you know, for the last couple of seasons, he has been the fan favourite, the star, the man who leads from the front and leads by example and, you know, scoring a lot of goals. Maybe now that that's dried up a little bit and Calvert-Lewin and James have came to the fore, could there just be that little sense of frustration that's just bugging them down, do you think? Or is this just a general bad run of form like every single player ever goes through?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. I think, you know, I think he's been Everton's star man, hasn't he, since he basically come in. You know, you have to look, it was only on Boxing Day, wasn't it? He's won a game for the first time around, not being in the side since he joined. And I think he relishes being that star man and being that one who carries the team and carries the burden and kind of, you know, tries to leave on the front. But I think, you know, recently, obviously, Calvert-Lewin, you know, comes to fore, James Rodriguez, as you say, and he finds has taken a little bit of a back seat. So maybe I think that is an issue, but I just think as well he's had a poor run of form, like most players do. And I think now it's more about some bouncing back. And, you know, I agree with what the Prenno and Gavin both said. I think, you know, you just got to leave him in the team. Not only if he plays himself back into form, start, you know, rather than in the cup on Saturday. I think you think back to the start of the season where, you know, the first couple of games and he hasn't scored and he was getting quite frustrated in front of goal, and you could see that. And, you know, I think the Fleetwood game away in the League Cup where he was given a start and, you know, he scored after 20 minutes and he just looked a different player straight away from that. And I think, you know, Carlo Ancelotti got to kind of do the same again now this weekend. And I know people will probably expect changes for Radon, but I think, you know, Richarlison's, he's got to stay in the team. We've got to hope that, you know, he plays himself back into form and he becomes that, you know, that lead figure again, because, you know, like the lads have said, he is so important for Everton. And, you know, his contribution when he's on top form is second to none. And, you know, it's no surprise, was it, on Friday that Everton struggled to create any real clear-cut chances with him having such an off night.
Preno, last time we were on the podcast together, we were happier than we were now, but we were also singing the praises of Tom Davis. And I thought the game against West Ham kind of summed up the juxtaposition that we spoke about on that podcast, wasn't it? I thought in the first half, he was dropping deep into those positions again and getting on the ball. And then maybe the second half just lost that little bit of composure and that little bit of consistency that we were asking for. Might have just went missing a little bit. What did you make of his performance overall?
I didn't think he was that bad, to be honest. Just an ordinary performance, like so many players that night. I mean, to be honest, he wasn't really the problem that night. I mean, Sheffield United, he was carrying the ball and he was driving forward and he was, you know, sort of trying to make things happen. But it was a very different game that night. I mean, West Ham, two solid banks of four, asking play, you know, teams to break them down. And that's not really Tom's game. You know, so you want your Richarlisons and, you know, the wider players to be doing that, your fullbacks to be getting forward. And again, that was an issue. I mean, Seamus Coleman normally does that so well. And obviously wasn't really able to do that as much as he would do normally. Although I thought he was like one of the brighter players and Godfrey just didn't have the space, you know, sort of to attack into. So it wasn't really a night for Tom to shine, but no, I didn't really think he was that bad. I mean, I wouldn't like to, you know, be critical of him. Yeah. That night, I thought our issues that night lay elsewhere. You know, so other areas of the pitch. I mean, again, I felt so sorry for Dominic Calvert-Lewin that night, who's feeding on absolute scraps at the moment. And I've seen people suggesting that the big problem is that Lucas Digne is injured and his supply line is being taken away. And it's not as simplistic as that. I mean, just that's part of it, obviously, because he provides such quality from the flanks that we're used to. And the quality from the flanks has been absent in recent games. And I'm thinking Alex Iwobi. I talked the last podcast about that one, and I forget which game it was now, where Calvert-Lewin made this great run into the box down the street end and he managed to leather it into the Bulland Road. And then there was one on New Year's Day where Seamus Coleman actually got, you know, free for once down the right-hand side. And Dominic made this great run into the box and Seamus played it just behind him. And it's just like you want a little bit of extra quality from the flanks. And that's what we lacked. I mean, Tom Davis was okay on New Year's Day, just okay. But we needed quality from the wider positions. And unfortunately, we didn't have it at all. And that's why we drew a blank, I'm afraid. And we need to rediscover that. Whether it's a question of, you know, other players coming back in again after injury, whether James Rodriguez, but if it's a start now, will make a difference. You know, I certainly hope so. But that is probably a reason. I know it's going off topic a little bit, but, you know, so why Dominic is drawing so many blanks at the moment.
Well, let's stay with you for a moment, Preno, because you've told me you're chomping at the bit to get into this. And when Adam got up today, he drew my attention to me. Yeah. He's at work. Yeah. And for anyone who doesn't know, that Chris Sutton and Robbie Savage, those big names of the game, on radio, on BBC Five Live Sport today, I've been promising to name and shame the divers and cheaters every week on their show. And this week they've gave the award to Dominic Calvert-Lewin for simulating a foul against West Ham, against Pablo Fornals, which you might be a better man than me, Preno. I don't remember that. But Chris Sutton says, the winner of the simulation game this week, the award you don't want to win, is Dominic Calvert-Lewin. They will be booing Calvert-Lewin. And he did try and rhyme booing and Calvert-Lewin.
Oh, dear.
If he carries on diving, come on, you're better than that, Dom. Stop simulating. And I'll just give you a few portions of the replies from Everton fans. One was, what in God's name is this? One told the BBC to fold, which is quite simple. And Adam Jones, our Echo reporter, says, I usually try and ignore this stuff rather than give it any attention, but this is potentially one of the most mind-boggling takes I've ever heard. How wrong can you be? I just think, look, obviously that they pay for their opinions, but a little bit embarrassing that, wasn't it?
It's laughable, utterly laughable. They're trying too hard to be controversial and they're actually shying away from the real issues, the real players who are diving all the time and simulating. And we know who we're talking about here. You know, the big name players, Mohamed Salah, Harry Kane, so why did they not, you know, sort of find the obvious, you know, opportunities from them, which you will find in every single game, but they didn't. They picked on Dominic Calvert-Lewin, which was utterly bizarre. The incident you're talking about, I have no recollection of, so it was clearly, you know, so clearly that low profile. I get the impression that it's pundits that don't watch Everton all that often As we tend to find, people talking about Richarlison not being a hard worker. You know, you're having a laugh, are you? You know, the hardest working ESL player in the team. It's people that just get little fleeting viewpoints of watching Everton Football Club play. Now, I'm thinking back, Calvert-Lewin got a little bit of flack from Jurgen Klopp about 2 years ago, was it? When he, in inverted commas, went over easily in a derby match to win the penalty that Wayne Rooney scored. Now, it was the same game that Adam Lallana, you know, went over even more easily. You know, so to win a penalty, or was it the following derby match? But that was reasonably high profile. So maybe that has just like lodged in their subconscious that Dominic Calvert-Lewin tends to be involved in, you know, some incidents revolving penalties. The only one I can think of is the one against Chelsea recently, which was a stonewaller, which like absolutely nobody complained about, you know, which he got cleaned up by the goalkeeper. Yeah. I genuinely can't think of any other incidents whereby he's gone down easily. If it had said Richarlison, I couldn't really have complained then. I would have thought, well, yeah, okay, he probably does go down a bit too easily sometimes, even though he does tend to, you know, sort of get clipped and he does, you know, milk it a little bit while he's down on the deck. But Dominic doesn't. Dominic never has done. It was just the most bizarre man to pick out, to highlight for the first of what you claim is going to be a series of naming and shaming. If you're going to make this a successful series, pick somebody that deserves it, not a completely left field one. I mean, it's got us talking about it because, you know, so we watch Everton regularly. The rest of the country won't. It's just, you know, to raise their eyebrows and think, really? I'm sorry. They could have really made a name for themselves by picking the people that are doing this routinely and, you know, sort of named and shamed them. But to pick somebody that is as honest as the day is long is a bizarre decision. It really is. Just laugh at it, which is what we've done, because it is. It's laughable.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It's tough, isn't it, Gav? Because, you know, it really does seem, you know, this game was hours before the incident itself, must have only been an hour before Paul Pogba arguably tripped himself up in a really big talk going to the weekend. Why do you think they've chosen Calvert-Lewin? Is it just purely to cause that much outrage that you get the attention?
I don't know, but I'm not sure. Is this something they do every week, or is this
apparently
a new thing for the new year?
Apparently it's something they do every week, yeah. But they kind of build it as, you know, crowning our first chief of the week. And it's very kind of accurate. To call it, you know, naming and shaming the cheat, it's very strong language, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the station in question, I've got a lot of time for it. We've got a lot of great presenters and a lot of great commentators, but it really... doesn't it do itself just as, shall we say, when it gets a little bit more, don't use the phrase down market, but it will do in this case, you know. And also, it's really poor. I think you can go through every Premier League game played in a round of matches and you'll see two or three things like that, won't you? Every game, either in or in out the area. So I don't think just picking one person out is particularly fair. Pick all 30 players out, you know. I trust the other thing, if you want to talk a name shame and if you want to get all moralistic about it, I presume in the same show they also mentioned those players who didn't social distance over Christmas.
Well, exactly.
You know, if you want to name and shame people, and I think that's far more serious. I trust that was given far more attention than people you know, potentially diving or whatever in the area. Those are the serious issues. I mean, you know, and that's the problem I've got. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know what it reminds me of? You know, I've seen all the tweets, Sam, and all. I know what it reminds me of. It reminds me of, you know, when Nias was the first player booked for the simulation. I just had a similar type of thought process, you know. But like Plano said, I bet you've been top one. He was a Man City Liverpool player this week, he wouldn't be done. But I don't know what he's been done previously, so I can't comment on that. But it's banal. I just don't see the purpose of it. You know, I can see it as part of a of generating a discussion, you know, of an intellectual discussion about it, but just couching those terms. I've seen the clip or heard the clip in question, and it's just lowest common denominator, isn't it? It's not punditry. You know, you turn into some sort of Saturday Night Game show, aren't you?
Yeah.
You know, which is just, it's just not, I'm not sure whether that's the role of that show, to be honest with you. But that's my take on it. I think there's far more behavioural issues by footballers over the Christmas and New Year period than, you know, trying to win a penalty, whatever. That's what we should be talking about.
Connor, can you save us? Can you remember what the incident was?
No, I have absolutely no idea what they were. But when I first heard the clip, and I actually, you know, he mentioned the one incident where he won the award, I was actually thinking to myself, when was that? You know, yeah. We've been talking about the same game. Like, there's that. That's just, it shows how blatant of a dive it was when no one even knows what they're talking about. I think it's just flabbergasting, really, isn't it? I think you think of it, it's just laughable. I think it's, you know, like Gav said, there's obviously a lot more going on right now in the Premier League in terms of, you know, behavioural issues than people diving. But, you know, I just think, again, it just seems like Everton, it's almost like they're the target, aren't they, of like this lazy punditry, you know, model, aren't they? They're just the easy target, you know, and it's been like that for a long time where, you know, these so-called, you know, experts, they just seem to, like, you know, take aim at Everton and use them as a bit of, you know, a bit of a punch bag. I just think, you know, it's just laughable. And I think, you know, I don't think Dominic Calvert-Lewin will be losing any sleep over the fact that he's won that award, if anything. I think he'll just be in amazement like the rest of us are, because, like Pennell said, there's just so many people who you could give the award to over him. You know, it's just, like you say yourself, Paul Pogba's on Friday. If we're going to just do one incident from the latest rounds of games, that's the most standout dive of the weekend's games, in the sense of he stripped himself up. But yeah, I don't think Calvert-Lewin will be losing too much sleep over winning that award, and I think he'll be laughing to himself.
That was classic, the Paul Pogba one. That was, as you'll remember, Gavin, Franny Lee, to mention Manchester City, because he was like the absolute master of chipping himself up in the box, and like, so did it frequently. Yeah. Scored 13 penalties in one season as a result. But this is an isolated incident of Everton attracting adverse publicity unfairly. We also attracted adverse publicity for actually requesting a full disclosure from Manchester City as to why the game was postponed, you know, at 3 or 4 hours' notice. Yeah. You know, so rather than people asking the questions themselves, well, which players were suffering from COVID, you know, some commentators out there sought to claim the moral high ground by blaming Everton for having the gall for demanding full disclosure. Let's face it, City have got previous for not, you know, offering full disclosure on incidents in the past. So why shouldn't we? So now it just seems that, you know, so Everton do seem to be a very easy target at the moment. And this is just the latest example of that. But it's also good to see that, you know, as a football club, we are sticking up for ourselves. I mean, demanding full disclosure from Manchester City, which we still haven't had, by the way, as to, you know, so which players were suffering and why the game was postponed without Everton having been consulted.
I just add that, yeah, I was a bit disappointed on that, especially some of the people involved, normally 50. You know, usually sound in their opinions. Preno saying that Evan should see the bigger picture rather than trying to get the game played, and, you know, and public safety and all that, which we all agree with. But that wasn't Evan's point, was it?
No.
Evan's point is, you know, from all intents and purposes, it didn't to be left out of the conversation and it being a fait accompli in terms of the postponement. And one full disclosure was perfectly entitled to, as the home team as well. And for I thought it was poor for several people to come out and say, and I know Spurs mentioned by a couple of people, to say they should be seeing a bigger picture and they'd realise safety is paramount and to get the game played. I didn't say that at all.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really, that wasn't great, a great look either. I'm not particularly fair on the club. I mean, I think he should have been looking at a far more, a better judge piece would be looking at the circumstances of why the game was postponed and, you know, where the protocols were followed. So not a good week, to be fair, and for that type of thing, you know.
Well, if Chris Sutton or Robbie Savage are listening, feel free to give one of us a message and tell them that was poor. We will move on now to the January transfer window and all the goodness that brings and the rumours and whatnot. But today, Preno, report from Sky Sports saying that PSG are hoping to seal a £31 million permanent deal for Moise Keane in the summer, if you or maybe even earlier. If you put yourself in the shoes of Marcel Brands and Carlo Ancelotti, would you be accepting even £31 million for Moise Keane? Is that a deal that you think benefits Everton? Maybe a few sell on clauses in there, or do you think that he still has a future at Goodison Park?
I have to answer this in a very slightly different way to the way in which you've asked it. Because if I was in the shoes of Marcel Brands and Carlo Ancelotti, they will probably think differently to myself. I'm thinking that Marcel Brands would be very, very keen to keep Moise Keane. I think he is a man that sees a lot of potential there. I think he was very instrumental in bringing him to the football club in the first place. And I think he believes that he's a project worth persevering with, which is why he was allowed to go on loan. And, you know, so when he returns, or if he returns, there will be, you know, so a much more rounded product that, you know, so could become a very valuable footballer for Everton. That jars with my opinion, because from what I've seen so far, I'd accept £31 million. I just don't think there's a player there that's suited for the Premier League. It's a really difficult and unforgiving league to blend into. And only from what I've seen of him, you know, so far, which is a reasonable amount. I've seen a player that can't hold the ball up particularly well. He's got strength, he's got pace, his finishing's okay. But the all-around package is just so rough around the edges that I think £31 million is decent money for him, and I'd be inclined to take it personally. Okay, I could be spectacularly wrong, and like so 2 or 3 years down the line, we might see a player that, you know, has matured and evolved into something that is far different to what we're seeing now. But at the moment, he reminds me a little bit of a flat-track bully. He was loving it in France. He was scoring goals for fun against a team that is so far superior to anybody else in that league that it's like, you know, so I don't know, Harry Kane going up to play for Celtic up in Scotland. You know, he'd score like 4 or 5 goals a game. I just think it's a similar kind of situation. So personally, yes, I think that we should take an offer like that. But will they? I'm not so sure. I think the powers that be probably think that, you know, Moise Keane is somebody worth persevering with. But not for the first time. I'm at odds with people at the football club.
Fairly forthright from Preno there then, Gav. Is it the same for you? Do you not see a Premier League footballer in Moise Keane?
I see a club who's just lost 142 million quid, albeit half of that down to, obviously, the COVID impact. See a club that may want to wish to cash in on him. I mean, they make a profit on him.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of the accounts, because obviously somebody's already accounted for some of the transfer fee, so they'll make a profit on him. Maybe, I don't know, 5 million, 6 million, something like that. Plus, obviously, I don't know what the wage situation is, who's paying his wages at the moment. So they'll have that commitment off the books, the wage commitments off the books. And I agree with Perno. I mean, I'd fancy playing for PSG, to be fair. Might get the odd goal. So, I mean, you see his record in France. I didn't see the game, but I believe he was poor at United, wasn't he? Is my understanding. I'd sell. I'd sell not because of his doubts over his ability as a player. I just think bear in mind our current financial position and needing to tighten up, I think it could be the best opportunity we have to financially to make the most of them, for want of a better phrase.
Gav makes a good point about the finances. Connor, are you going to be the dissenting voice who would get Moise Keane back in the summer, or do you think it almost has to be? It's quite similar, I suppose, to the Ademola Luchman and Red Bull Leipzig deal, isn't it? Where if the right offer comes in, do you just have to say, look, the financial kind of gain outweighs the kind of risk of keeping them at Everton and seeing what he develops into? And obviously, the wishes of the player have got to come in to it as well. And from looking on the outside, looking in, he does look pretty happy in France, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's my biggest, you know, take on this. I think know, does Moyes Keane want to come back to Everton? And I think the answer's been no. I think he's want to stay in Palace and play for PSG, which makes you think that, you know, a £31 million offer would be too good to turn down for Everton. I don't really see the point as well. If he has got aspirations to stay in Palace, by the club has looked to try and, you know, hold out till the summer in the hope that, you know, he will want to come back and fight for his place. I mean, you know, if you're always keen looking at the form Dominic Calvert-Lewin's been in, you know, you're coming back to play second fiddle to him anyway, pretty much regardless of how he's doing PSG. And I think, you know, I think £31 million would be a good deal for Everton. As things stand, I think, you know, you look at it'd be a profit from what they paid on him. And, you know, ultimately, if the player's got no ambition to come back at Everton and prove himself, you know, what's the point in keeping him? How did it feel when Moise Keane left, you know, in, was it September, October time, to go to PSG, that was probably the last time we'd see him in, you know, an Everton shirt playing for Everton, because I never really bought into the thing of, oh, he's just going to go there for the season, you know, prove himself, improve in it, and then come back and kick on in the Premier League. I think we've seen over time, haven't we, certainly, you know, the Adelum Lookan example, that never really quite works out, and, you know, people do go away, but then they go away and get the head turned, and you never really come back. And I think that's ultimately what's happened here. I think, you know, we'd be looking around at, you know, PSG playing in the Champions League, scoring goals on a weekly basis, and he probably doesn't want to, he's got no ambition to come back to Everton. And if that is the case, which I imagine it probably would be, then, you know, £31 million would be certainly a good deal for Everton if they could, you know, try and reinvest some, even just some of that this month and get some much needed reinforcements in.
Well, I called him out, didn't I, in the podcast? And Chris Sutton has just replied to my tweet. He says, we've been playing a simulation game on BBC Five Live Sport for 2.5 years now. If players carry on diving, we will continue to play the clips and call those players out. Most people in this country are sick of the divers and the simulation. It's ruining the game. He still hasn't really answered the basic question of
just the incident we're talking about. So.
Yeah. Very strange from Chris Sutton there.
I suspect he's got a very busy timeline on his Twitter account today.
my point on that, though, is it has to be done in a more constructive way, doesn't it? A more serious discussion. Because than a banal, like, award. I mean, and also as well, you know, whether somebody died or not, as we say, you don't know, do you? Like that Calvert-Lewin one at Anfield, kind of the one you're talking about, with Lovren, wasn't it? I thought he was pushed over. You can tell Lovren pushed him over, he never died. Yeah. You can tell Marloff he was pushed over. But as you say, he got stiff. So I just think, I know what he's trying to do, but I just think it not a good look for me.
He got stick and he never got one. Was it the following season, the Marco Silva final game, where he was racing into the box at the Kop end and Virgil van Dijk clearly pushed him and no penalty was given? Presumably, again, because publicity had been attached to the previous incidents.
That was more of a penalty than let's have a pot on the 5-2 at Anfield. I'll scrap this one. That's what I mean. That's the whole point. People get reputations unfairly. Yeah. You know, I'd be interested to know why Pogba wasn't, how many times Pogba's been pulled up in 2.5 years. Yeah. Or how many penalties have United had since Solskjaer's? I thought something is ridiculous.
701.
But I think there's a serious issue. And by all means, discuss it. It's given a war out. It just undermines the whole argument, doesn't it? Really. Yeah, it's not a game show. It's a professional sport.
Well, moving on to the final part of the podcast then, to stick with the transfer window theme and something else that brought a strong reaction from Everton supporters this week, Preno, was a report in the Daily Mail that Carlo Ancelotti and Marcel Brands could be considering giving Gylfi Sigurdsson a new contract. His contract runs out in 2022. Your thoughts on that, yay or nay?
Yeah, probably going to upset loads of people again here because, yeah, I think that's a decent idea. I'm a fan of Gylfi Sigurdsson's. I know not everybody is. He's a very Marmite character, but he's got something that we don't really have in abundance, which is creativity. He's got to be played in the right portion of the pitch to actually see that, but he can make things happen. I know he hasn't scored as many goals this season as we'd like to see, as he did in the season before last. But he still has quality. He's still highly thought of by Carlo Ancelotti, so much so that he's worn the armband on numerous occasions this season. It's just all about playing Guilfi in the right part of the pitch. But I'm a fan, and I just think he offers something to the squad that we don't have masses of. So I don't see the point. So what you're going to get for him if you're trying to put him on the transfer market now, given what we spent for him, you do well to get a fraction of that back, especially given presumably the wages that he's on. So I just don't really see the point in letting him go.
I think that would be the issue, wouldn't it? That if he was signed for 45 million on a 5-year contract, that would make his depreciating value 9 million pounds a year. So that with 1 year left in his contract, he'd be worth technically 9 million. Could you see someone paying 9 million for a 31, 32 year old Guilfi Sigurdsson, Gav?
And equally, could we attract somebody that can bring what he brings to the squad for the same value? Sorry to jump in there, but yeah. So
no.
Just say, Sam, I'm very impressed by using the terms juxtaposition and depreciating value on the podcast. This is new territory for me.
I bring a touch of class there, Phil Kirkbride.
Yeah, I was going to say,
a touch of class there.
Yeah, very good. What was the question again? Sigurdsson, insist them on this. I can understand why people are not happy. For all I agree with some of Penno's stuff. I think this is the classic. Put him on a longer contract, so we sell him, we can probably get a little bit more for him, to be fair. I think that's probably
what it
looks like for me. that's what it looks like to me. But sometimes that can backfire for you. I mean, we did the same with Kevin Morales. We did the same thing. That backfired completely, didn't he? I get that to extend it, you know, new contract to keep his value. But as you say, how old is Guilfi now? Is he 31? Kind of thing. Is he 30, 31? Yeah. You'd be lucky to, you know, if they sold him next 12 months for 9, 10 million, we wouldn't be losing anything. Because of, as you beautifully explained, depreciating value calculation there. Sam, you know, so, I'm 50-50 on this, to be honest with you. Yeah. But I can see why people aren't happy, especially after the poor performance on that. That doesn't help. If they said after Sheffield United's new contract, okay, after Wednesday when he, after the West Ham when he was poor, different thing, isn't it, you know? But I can see why people aren't happy, to be fair. Fully understand.
Is that what it all comes down to then, Connor? Getting someone to pay a reasonable fee for a 31-year-old and ultimately shoulder his sizable wages. I think there was reports of maybe interest from America potentially in the summer, but it would probably take something like that, wouldn't it, to offload them at this point?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's always been the issue, hasn't it, with Guilfi Sigurdsson over the last couple of years, is, you know, who would pay a sizable fee for him and then who would take on his wages. I agree with what both the lads have said there. I think, you know, it's a 50-50 call. This, in terms of, I think, fans, the way they look at it, I think, you know, some will, you can see the reason why in terms of his experience. You know, Carlo Ancelotti clearly thinks he's got something about him. You know, he's wore the captain's armband. He's played in numerous positions for his boss so far this season. But I agree with Gav. I think if he'd have asked after Sheffield United or Chelsea when he was, you know, he was really impressed when he showed signs of what he's capable of, people would have maybe been in favour. But I think after Friday, he was kind of, you know, he's one of them kind of people who's, he's still a lingering thing of the Steve Walsh era, isn't he? Of, you know, someone who was brought in for a lot of money and who's on a high wage, who hasn't really lived up to his expectations. So I can see why they're doing it. But I think a lot of Everton fans see him as, you know, someone connected to that Steve Walsh reign, and that he's another piece of, you know, kind of devils who the club needs to get rid of and start again. But I would be surprised to see him sign a new, you know, maybe a new 2-year contract. Certainly maybe just to keep himself, you know, Carlo Ancelotti tied over with experience and someone who can, you know, help him out and play numerous positions across the midfield.
Well, lads, thank you very much for joining me. We'll be back later in the week to preview what will hopefully be a much more cheery occasion, but good to get it all off our chest and good to have some live input from Chris Sutton while we were live on it. Always a nice little interlude. Thank you very much again. for listening. Hope you've all had a great start to the new year. Hopefully we will see you all back at Goodison Park very soon as well, when it is safe to do so. We've been Sam Carroll, Conor O'Neill, Dave Prentice, Gavin Buckland, and you've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.